And now I'm going to introduce you to our new feature. It's going to be with us for a few programs of Capital Events because they're short stories that are rather fine and well written. On the Veranda, we've called this segment, and it's with the author and tale teller Roger Underwood AM. And the technical production and soundscape for these recordings were created by Edo Brands. Jenny Davis OAM from Theatre 180 edited the stories, and I produced them. Now, Roger has over 60 years' experience as a firefighter, a district, regional and research manager in West Australian forests, and a bushfire consultant in Australia and overseas. He's a pioneer of aerial burning and the use of fire spotter aircraft, general manager of the Department of Conservation and Land Management in WA from 1985 to 1994, and then later became director of a consultancy practice with a focus on bushfire management. Author of many scientific papers and so on, and also about the forest history in Western Australia. Founder in 2003 and chairman for 20 years of the Bushfire Front. He was awarded the National Medal for 15 years fire service and became a member of the Order of Australia AM in 2019 in recognition of all this work in bushfire management and history. Now, Roger is waiting for us on his veranda with the first in our series of stories on the veranda.
My first bushfire. The first bushfire I attended was in December 1958. I remember it vividly to this day. I was just 17, had recently left school and was starting my first real job. This was in a forestry gang at the timber town of Dwellingup, deep in the West Australian Jarrah Forest. Luckily, I did have some work experience, having spent school vacations in shearing sheds or helping with the harvest on farms in the wheat belt during my teenage years. But this was the first time I entered the mysterious world of the forests. The little mill towns and forestry settlements of the forest country were scarcely known to most West Australians in those days. They were truly a world apart, with their own distinctive preoccupations, language and culture. The concept of timber town tourism and forest recreation was virtually unknown. Western Australians spent their weekends and vacations on the coast or at the beach. The bush meant work, not fun. I was definitely there to work. This came about because I had been awarded a scholarship to study forestry, and one of the scholarship conditions was that I spend all my university vacations working for the Forest Department in the bush. No special treatment or training was given to students to whom this applied. On the contrary, the idea was that we start right at the very bottom. So the summer of 1958-59, preceding my first year studies, was spent as the most junior member of a forestry gang at Dwellingup. Initially, I was a novice, but by the time I left Dwellingup and sat in my first class in my first year of my first forestry studies, I had been well and truly initiated. Most of all, I had sniffed the smoke and felt the heat of bushfire battle. Arriving in Dwellingup on my first day, I was taken to meet the district forestry officer. This was Bruce Beggs, later to become a hero of the 1961 Dwellingup fire. Beggs was a tall, dark-haired and authoritative young man, aged about 30, and he was clearly lord of all he surveyed, and not one to waste words on a brand new recruit. He told me where I had been assigned and that he expected me to listen and to learn from the old hands. I was then settled into one of the tiny one-room huts in the single men's camp beyond the workshops and told to report to the yard next morning at 07:45, dressed to work in the bush and with a crib. The next morning, I found my gang and reported for duty. As I was soon to discover, summer work for forestry gangs in the Jarrah Forest in the 1950s consisted largely of firefighting. There had been a policy of no fuel reduction burning for the previous 30 years, and apart from a few small areas where prescribed burns had recently been introduced, the bush carried huge fuel loads. This meant that small fires quickly became large fires, and since fires were always starting in the forest, thanks to wood-burning steam locomotives, lightning strikes, escapes from farmers burning off, accidents and arsonists, we were kept very busy. I think I must have attended at least 20 fires that summer. Each gang consisted of five or six men and was under the control of a tough overseer, often a returned soldier in those days. Our overseer was Bob Milam, a little man, but one to whom truly the description of being a ball of muscle applied. Apart from his skill as a bushman, he had an astonishing repertoire of colourful expressions, jokes and yarns, most of them extremely filthy. Over several weeks of listening to him telling these stories at morning and afternoon smoko and over our lunchtime crib, I never heard him once repeat himself. Nearly all of the forestry gangs in those days included one or two new Australians, migrants who had come out to Australia from Europe in the first wave of immigration after the war. One of the men in our gang was from Latvia and was very well educated. He had formerly been a university professor, but had been caught up in the war and the occupation of his country by Russia and the awful post-war aftermath. Eventually, he had escaped to Australia. His educational credentials were not recognised by the Australian authorities, so he had taken the only job available, as a firefighter in a forestry gang. I remember him teaching me the proper way to file an axe and then hone the edge with a whetstone. In his broken English, he gave me a perfect instruction, and I practice his techniques with success to this day. I also remember his sense of humour and cheerful spirit. Nothing depressed or daunted him, and his love of the bush and of his day-to-day freedom. This was also a lesson I took with me for the rest of my life. On my second day on the job, we were dispatched to a bushfire in Jarrah Forest, somewhere way east of Dwellingup. The fire had been started by the steam locomotive going out from the Bankshardale mill for a rake of logs. The smoke had been spotted by the lookout towers, the fire pinpointed, and our instructions relayed from headquarters over the radio. I was lucky to catch the twilight of the steam age in the Jarrah Forest. Elsewhere, the first diesel log trucks were taking over. The mill's locomotives were wood burners, unlike the government locomotives of the day, which burnt coal, and they were the perfect mobile incendiary machine, churning out a cocktail of steam and sparks as they puffed through the bush. Apart from the way that they started bushfires, I loved them. The distant wail of the steam whistle through the forest, the chug and beat of the engine, the drift of steam and wood smoke trailing down the line, and the romance of the railway man's lifestyle. It was a blazing midsummer that day of my first fire, but a potential bushfire catastrophe was minimised by the fact that the bush bordering the railway line was regularly burned thanks to sparks from the loco and carried light fuels. On this occasion, the firefighting was straightforward. Reaching the fire, the gang fell into what I later came to appreciate was a well-practised routine. While we unloaded our tools and set up the HF radio, the overseer made a reconnaissance. He then reported to HQ while the rest of us started in with pack sprays and heavy forestry rakes, making a fire break along the edge of the fire. It was a mild fire with flames only about knee high, but it was going well under the dry, windy conditions and had already burnt about a hectare when we started work. I soon learned the discipline. Each man played a role as we moved steadily along the fire edge, starting at the tail or downwind end of the fire and working towards the head fire. The lead man with a pack spray would cool down the flames with water, and the rest of us followed behind, raking a trail through the dry leaves and the litter of twigs and bark. Every few minutes, the overseer would instruct one of us to drop back to check for flare-ups or sparks across the fire line. These were known as hopovers. Being the novice, I was also the one detailed every couple of hours to boil a billy and make tea and to listen out to the radio schedule on the hour. By mid-afternoon, we had contained the fire to about 2 or 3 hectares, had a raked trail around the whole perimeter, and no running fire. But just as we stood back to mop the collective brow, there came a great puffing, clanking and whistling around the curve in the adjacent railway line. The locomotive, pulling a full rake of logs, was approaching on its return journey to Bankshardale Mill. As it drew near, the driver shut off the steam and the engine coasted past. From the cab, a grubby arm and 2 fingers appeared, making an unmistakably derisive gesture. The gang was not immune to this provocation. It was clear that over the years, they had fought many a forest fire started by this very man and his infernal machine. Downing tools and running over to the line, they shouted insults at the engine driver and the fireman. The latter simply grinned, and then he fired a telling parting shot. As steam was applied and the train gathered speed, he jerked his grimy thumb back down the line and yelled, "There's another one back there." There was indeed, and we had to deal with that one as well. It took until well after midnight to get it under control and both fires mopped up. Mr. Beggs sent out another gang to help us, but we still had to do the whole job that night and without any machinery or assistance from a heavy-duty tanker. Our gang truck was a 3-ton Austin with a small water tank and pump on the back, but the pump had no motor and we had to take turns operating it by hand. A long stint on the hand pump felt a bit like being in a Roman slave galley. The pumped water had to be carefully marshalled. It was not used to douse flames, but to extinguish burning logs around the perimeter of the fire after it had been contained. Mopping up also involved gang members walking the edge of the fire with shovels and throwing any smouldering bits and pieces back into burnt ground. The aim was a 20-metre strip around the fire that was blackout. It was hot, hard, dirty and smoky work, but to me it was a grand adventure. This was made even more memorable when I was assigned to be the swamper for the legendary tree faller Bob Ashcroft. He had been recruited for the evening to drop 3 large jarrah trees which had fires burning high up in the dead wood in the crown. There was a risk that these would throw sparks across our control line when the easterly came in the morning. There were no chainsaws in those days, and tree felling was still being done with axe and crosscut saw. My job was to help carry Bob's tools and then hold a lamp, for it was dark by now, while he single-handed felled the burning trees. Swinging his axe in the lamplight that night, the sweat ran from him in rivers. But his axe work was a thing of beauty, millimetre perfect. There was a cleanness of line, a tireless rhythm, and an effortless focusing of energy I will never forget. The 2 fires were eventually declared safe. We packed up our gear and headed for home. I arrived back at my hut in the single men's camp in the early hours of the morning. My first fire was behind me. It was also the first of a great many times over the years ahead when I was to come home from firefighting, my clothes reeking of wood smoke, with red eyes and a grimy face, and so tired I could hardly stand up. My bushfire education had begun. Thank you.
we'll be catching up with more stories from the veranda. And whose veranda is it? It's our author and reader there, Roger, who has marvellous stories to tell. So anyway, that was the first in that series.